Hey, welcome back, everyone. It's PodCavs again. It's PodCavs number 46, but it's pretty much PodCavs number one of the new season, I assume. Jack, how you doing?
Actually, man, I'm good, man. I'm very good. This is like a great situation for the city of Cleveland, and that makes me happy.
I am as well very happy. I was pretty much overwhelmed last night, yesterday. And it's pretty cool. Casey, our producer, is here. Thank you, Casey, and welcome
back. Casey, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Not much, just chilling, you know? I think it's safe to say that Cleveland is just a happy city right now. And that's been my feeling ever since the news broke.
I'm not in Cleveland right now, but I'll be returning on Monday. And I expect that things will continue to be happy through the weekend and even into the next working week.
That would be, I think, a safe assessment of the situation.
Let's get into this, man. Let's talk some LeBron James.
He's
the Cavaliers now. And he wrote this like very passionate letter that addressed a lot of concerns that people had about him and his character. And
I'm pretty excited to talk about it with you, because over the years you've been maybe the most critical person of LeBron over the last 4 years.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I think that's actually possible.
No,
I think like of the non like racist wacko like maniac people out there, like I've got people that really sat down and watched every game that he played here and absorbed it all. I might be like.
I think you were his number one detractor.
As far as I know. I know Rab wrote that book, so he's on my level.
Scott is in the conversation. I think you were more vocal and more consistent with your, because it was every day in my face, basically, because I know you and we interact almost every day. And
in my capacity as like the underground kind of media that I've been involved with over the last 4 years, you know, just doing tweets and social media, and also the zine that we do, the Cavzine,
and podcast,
the blog on and the podcast, which predates
you've also
LeBron,
said
but
bad things on podcasts about LeBron.
I have, like, I think I may be like his one of the. On the forefront of the detractors. No one's called me up to ask for my opinion yet. This is my first interview since LeBron announced in that Sports Illustrated piece that he's going to be a Cavalier again. So you want to interview me?
I want to discuss with you the situation, because over the years we've had countless conversations over coffee or beer or harder liquors about why you hated him so much.
I'll take exception to that to start, because it seemed like the very first thing people came out and said is like, oh, you're a hater. You know, this, these feelings that you have and your ideas that you have about LeBron James are irrational. And you have this emotional reaction that has nothing to do with, which is completely unfounded. And so like the very first thing they said is like, oh, it's like an ex-girlfriend dumped you and you're just a hater. And I've never agreed with that, and I still don't.
I'm not calling you a hater. I'm saying you hated LeBron after his decision.
I'm not even saying I hated him. I really disliked him. It was like watching somebody kick your little brother right in the balls and then take his lunch money. And in this analogy, Cleveland is that little brother. And it's just like when somebody does that, you never forget it, and you... It's not that you hate him. It's just that's not somebody you're ever going to like again.
Has that changed?
Which brings up this, well, that's the whole question. Like, there's this huge shift now. And go ahead. You can ask me any questions.
Well, okay. So my position over the years, I think over the years, my position hasn't changed much, that I never hated LeBron. And I conceded that his decision was poorly executed, and that maybe things were done that he could have not he didn't need to do and stuff like that. But overall, yeah.
I'm not as interested in your feelings on whether you hate him or not, though.
No. I was just setting up my question. Can you please let me do this, please? Thank you. I still very much enjoyed watching him play basketball over the last 4 years, which you did not. You know,
no.
You completely blocked him out of your sensor. I don't know how to explain this, but anyway, now that he's back and that he came back probably the right way, what are your feelings? Just the event, not like how it just came together.
Are you asking me about what it's going to be? How I'm going to feel to watch him play for the Cavaliers?
No. I'm asking you how you felt when you read the
second decision
and you heard of his decision.
All right. The stuff that here's my concern is really this, because a lot of people put the focus on the decision in 2010, the TV show, and how humiliating it was for the city of Cleveland, and like the fact that it wasn't just this one free agent leading a team, which had happened to Cleveland before numerous times, but it was the way that he conducted himself in doing it, and this arrogance that was just so off-putting, that was on full display in an hour-long TV show that put a lot of people off. And that has stood as, like, the reason to not like LeBron James, because he did that. But for me, it was like, you know, he was on the Cavaliers for 7 years, and from almost day one, maybe even before day one as a Cavalier, he had this, like, arrogance that he was better than us and that he belonged in a better market, a bigger market, where people would be able to more fully appreciate how talented he was and how great he was. And we here, you know, in Cleveland were just like the jump off for something bigger and much more important that he would do. And so, and I say this as like, you know, I could talk to you about what the way he behaved at team meetings, he blew off, or he just like, they said he would just make jokes about Jamario Moon when they were planning plays, that he then would like not run plays and Mike Brown get flack. But it was clear that he just didn't know him because he didn't care. You know, his friends would fly on team flights to the exclusion of local media. Every interview that LeBron James would give would be to a national source and never to like a sit down with somebody that, you know, like a Bob Finan, or a guy like that, that was like a local media guy. And right up to what, like to the very end, this is how he conducted himself like the entire time he was here. I don't know. People talked about, he was a terrible tipper. He just didn't really care about how he was perceived by people in Cleveland, because it was just like, well, they love me for my basketball and that's who I am. And it doesn't really matter who these people are, 'cause I really don't give a shit about them. And so to me, that attitude preceded the decision, and the decision wasn't really so much a shocker. And especially with what led up to it with, like, you know, the Larry King interview and like putting, you know, if you went to a Cavs game or if you followed the Cavs and watched those 7 years when he played for them, those felt like important games for the city. But for him, it just wasn't. It was like a vacuous, he was always like this vacuous guy, like, and, you know, people talk about how they believe that he quit in game five against the Celtics. In fact, Dan Gilbert said that he not only quit in game five against the Celtics, but in a number of other games, including 2009 playoff series against the Orlando Magic. And
which is completely preposterous, because he had one of the best playoff series ever. But okay,
look at the box moving on. Six, and you'll see that Delonte West was the best player on the team. And if you watched the game, you saw that Delonte West was the best player on the game in game six. And if you want to compare the talent of Delonte West to the talent of LeBron James, that really shouldn't have happened.
So my question,
if the guy wanted to win. So I'm getting, you know, let me just conclude this thought with this. I felt this way before the decision. The decision wasn't like the step off for me suddenly saying like, I can't be a fan of LeBron James, or even I don't want LeBron James on the Cavaliers, or I don't want to cheer for LeBron James. It was actually before that. So,
but you never expressed those feelings before. You put up with all of this, You did.
No.
Because I didn't. The Cavs were winning. You never, I never remembered you bringing up something of the sort to me before.
I didn't. My turning point was the day before the decision. All this stuff was going on, and I was making the same excuses everyone else in Cleveland was for this guy's terrible behavior, which was, he's a great player, and this is what we have to tolerate if we want to have a good player, a great player, a guy that can take Cleveland to a championship. We'll just put up with whatever. So to me, if he's coming back to Cleveland in this thing that he wrote and he wanted to apologize, it was beyond, I'm sorry for the decision, or I made a mistake with the way I conducted myself in the decision. It was just, I put certain things ahead of my community that cared about my success, not only as a basketball player that played for a team for them, but as a member of their community, somebody that grew up here. That was an important factor. So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, so I've heard you tell the same story over the last four years, countless times. And I agree with you. I'm not saying that I don't. And I think, you know, my own opinion of the situation really shifted when I moved here. I've been living here for a year now, and I now consider it my home. And I guess I now have a special relationship with the area, the city, the people. And I have a better grasp on what you're explaining, you know? Knowing what he did, how he conducted himself while announcing his decision, and you said he answered some of the concerns that you just expressed, you know, do you think it's truthful? Do you think it's heartfelt? And do you think he's going to live up to what he said in this letter?
Well, there's a lot of things you could read into what you wrote in the letter about the Sports Illustrated article about coming back. And in the past, reading or hearing things LeBron James said that were already filtered through a media source like this one was, it was difficult for me to say, you know, LeBron supports or thinks anything that's said in this piece, or versus Nike wants LeBron to come off as a guy that says.
You're saying it was always calculated in your mind. Everything.
It always felt like everything was written by a PR person, except when he was up in front of a press conference, and you heard him say ridiculous things like, you know, people can criticize me, but they're just spoiled by my play. What did he say about, like, oh, my critics, well, they got to go back to their jobs on Monday morning and I'll be playing basketball or whatever. Like, that's the kind of unfiltered LeBron James I always felt was the more honest one, and also the one that was the least attractive. So, with respect to the Sports Illustrated piece, it's really hard to tell whether this was a like, if you sat down and you were just like, let's talk to LeBron James, biggest critic, and here, we found him on Twitter. He writes for Stephanie Rules, and he's a podcast guy. And, like, what is it that we need to put in this piece to satisfy that guy that this isn't BS and it's not a Nike commercial? I mean, it's hard for me to say they didn't hit on everything they needed to hit on, because it comes across as very genuine, and it seems like he gets it in terms of realizing, A, the things he really effed up with his with the original decision in 2010 and the way he left the city and the way he behaved in the city, maybe even, and who he is with respect to where he's from, as like you know, a key point for this. And he mentioned his family also. I mean, he's about to have three kids. Those kids are about to be able to read the internet and hear about, you know, what people thought about him and why, and listen to podcasts even. And, you know, that's a big thing, I think. And I can see how what he said seems like the most honest, and it could be the most honest thing that I've ever heard from LeBron James.
Are you saying you need more time for him to prove that what he said here is what he really feels and what he will do in the future.
It seems to me like the way that he's explained his desire to come back to Cleveland and the fact that he is doing it, he's committed to doing it, are huge factors. You can't ignore that and say, like, all right, this guy's still full of it, and he's going to come back, and it's going to be BS again, and he'll be quitting in game five because of some rumor somebody spreads about his mom or whatever, or, you know, whatever else is going to happen. He just wanted his buddies to be able to sit courtside. He doesn't really care about Cleveland or the fans. And you can't really say that with any confidence or without sounding like you're some kind of raving lunatic. So at this point, I think you have to give him credit for his decision to return to Cleveland and for his very cohesive explanation for why he wants to return to Cleveland. And, you know, it's hard for anybody. I think it would be hard for anybody to say this guy is still full of it. But you can't just ignore the fact that he was in Cleveland for 7 years and behaved like a complete a-hole. And then for the years after that, even, like, well, he was in at least the first year after that, before they won the championship, he kind of continued that, saying, like, oh, Cleveland has bad karma. Yeah, I think he was happy when we lost to the Lakers by 58 or whatever. Like, you can't just ignore that. I hope that he's a better person. Yeah, I hope that he's the guy that wrote the Sports Illustrated piece, but I'm not just going to ignore the fact that I know that this guy was a complete jerk in the past. No.
Okay. But he obviously put the word out there that he wanted to make amends. And I think this has gone on. You know, I remember several times he was interviewed and talked about how he took on this role of the villain and he didn't like it. It wasn't who he was. He wasn't happy anymore and stuff like that. And he decided to change, you know, the way he was going to be as a person. And it brought him two championships. I want to believe, at least, maybe I'm very naive, I don't know, but I want to believe that he made a conscious decision that the best decision for his life, for his personal life, was to come home, and that he's ready now at 29 years old as maybe the biggest figure in sports in the United States to take on the role of the leader, the example, and the most influential person in the city. Is that something?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying the people that have been reading into LeBron's motivation is this or LeBron's motivation is that for the last 4 years, like they have, and even before that, before the 2010 decision, to me, they're always just being completely nuts. You know, LeBron's going to want this or LeBron's going to want that, just completely based on speculation or their own human experience, you know? And I feel like we're past that now, though, where LeBron actually comes out and says, this is my motivation. This is what this is who I am. This is what I want to do. Because that's what we know his motivation now, because it's either that or he's not telling the truth, and we'll find out through the way he behaves once he's in Cleveland. If they are planning on how long they stay in other cities while they're on the road, based on LeBron James' party plans and whatever Maverick Carter has planned in whatever city they're in, Houston or whatever, if they're planning on keeping the team playing there, it seems to me this is all just like, we wanted control over our organization and we figured out a way to do it. We had it. We didn't have it in Miami. We wanted to get that back. And if that's the real motivation here, then this could be BS, and we just won't know until time goes by.
Regardless of whether or not his intentions are good, it was the right basketball move to let him come back, right?
From the Cavaliers' perspective?
Yes.
Of course. That was be better. I mean, it's the best player that you could possibly get.
In your opinion, there was you can't take a shot at the Cavs for taking him back, even if it turns out that it's complete bullshit and that all he wants is just run the show, and he couldn't do that because of Pat Riley in Miami. Which I don't think it is what's going on, but I have heard like
I don't know reports
like, that you know, he was unhappy with the kind of tickets that his buddies would get at the Heat games, and that his mom wasn't allowed on or media credentials or whatever, and that things like that. I heard that. I've heard that in Miami, that it happened in Miami. I just don't know that it is the primary reason why he comes back. And even if he demands those things, I don't know that it takes away from what he just did in saying, I'm coming back to Cleveland and I'm going to set an example for generations. I think, you know, it's much bigger than basketball, honestly.
Let me ask you this question, because this is something I've been knocking around in my head. Does this mean, like, based on the things that he addressed in his letter about community and about wanting to be an example and realizing that he is one for kids here, and doesn't that validate some of the things that Dane Gilbert said in his letter and that we, you know, critics of LeBron James have been complaining about him for the last 5 years?
Most likely, and he says as such, you know, he's made mistakes and he realizes that today.
But if he's admitting that there are mistakes, doesn't that mean we're right to criticize him for doing the things he did?
But I'm not saying you were wrong for criticizing him. I've never said that you were wrong for criticizing him. I said that I didn't agree with everything you criticized him.
No, but there has been this tension between like the quote get over it end quote people running around, and then the people that are just like, you know, screw this guy, he was a jerk, for years now. I mean, doesn't this put an end to that? Isn't it like, all right, now you can get over it? Like, we don't even know if still is a, if you ignore the fact that he the way he behaved as a Cavalier the last time, you're pretty naive, I think. But we can be hopeful, we can believe his intentions are true, but and he's apologized for some of the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But that means, to me, that means we were right to be critical as a community and as fans and as the owner of the organization.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I don't know. I read this over and over yesterday, and I couldn't help myself but think that it validated the decision that I made to move to Cleveland somehow. And that there are other people, not just LeBron, right, but that agree with me that moving back, coming to Cleveland was the right move for my personal life. And once again, those two things could be completely unrelated, but it just so happens that you just moved back to Cleveland. Casey, you can step in right now because you just moved back to Cleveland as well about a year ago, right?
I mean, it feels awesome. I can definitely relate with his sentiments in that letter. I don't know. Like it, Cleveland is just a place that you have to, if you grow up in or you spend time there, you just don't understand. And I finally feel like LeBron understands it, and that, you know, he's ready to take on this challenge, you know, with us. And I don't know. It just feels good. Finally, you know, it's come full circle.
Jack, you've been back here for 18 months, and you love it.
I always loved Cleveland, though, man. Yeah, and I never would have done what he did to it in 2010 or before that. So fine, but all right. I mean, it's the best place in the world, and it's only getting better.
Okay.
If you had the vision to see that, you know, congratulations to them.
Do you think it matters for the story that he wins a championship in Cleveland, or he already won by coming back?
No, give me a break. Come on. You really asking me that?
I'm asking you.
You honestly want
on a personal level, I'm just saying.
This doesn't mean anything unless he wins a championship now. Doesn't mean anything. I'm great he had this personal revelation, and it's good for the city that they have a great player. But ultimately, historically, if he comes back and he quits in playoff series and he doesn't take the game seriously, and he doesn't elevate this young team to something better, and he puts pressure on the organization to make dumb trades and kills their flexibility and or ability to make moves. If we see, you know, if we see Wiggins traded for, you know, a season of Kevin Love, and we see you know, Waiters traded and the other rookie contract guys traded to appease him with moves for guys we perceive are big guys. Well, I mean, what does that say?
I mean, I would trade the entire roster for a championship, honestly.
I would trade the entire roster for a championship too, but they tried that in 2000 and, you know, they did exactly that and it did not work. And then he did complain and other people complained by proxy for him, but literally he did about how much the roster sucked.
Yeah.
And how the guys he played with weren't that good.
For someone who always emphasized on how important the team was and team was family and stuff, it was pretty much bullshit. That's for sure.
So much about this guy that has to be, I don't know if people realize that. Well, right now it's just kind of like a rah-rah. We got a great player. Our team's going to improve dramatically. We have, you know, playoff and even maybe championship aspirations now. Like, right now, that's the level we're at. But the next level is, like, what kind of changes is LeBron James going to force in the organization? Are those going to be good changes that the organization has to make? Or, you know, or do they need to make them? Who's going to be on the hook for those decisions? Because it seems like he's, at this point, right now, today, has avoided responsibility for everything for the disaster kind of roster that ended up being on the team in 2010-11.
Well,
how much responsibility did you give LeBron James for the 2016 losing streak, you know?
Well, he has part of it because he left the team, and it would have never happened if he didn't.
Well, not just leaving. He left the team.
In a situation, the idea, they had yeah, jeopardized their future regardless. Right. I agree with you. There's no question about that. But
so he has to be a dramatically different person for this to be a championship situation. And I'll tell you what, though. Like, one thing that gave me a lot of hope that was going to happen is the immediate report that Mike Miller is going to sign with the Cavaliers.
In Ray Allen, and if he doesn't retire.
Yeah, possibly Ray Allen will be a Cavalier.
That's more recruiting that he done in the first 7 years of his career in Cleveland, right? Already.
Yeah, he's done, that's what I was going to say, but he's done more recruiting in 2 days than he did 7 years.
That's going in the right direction, right?
That's absolutely going in the right direction. I'm not saying there's no optimism here. I'm just saying, like,
you're still skeptical somehow.
And there's reason to be.
Do you think you're skeptical because you want to protect yourself? Because
no,
this guy hurt
like
you so much.
Somebody humiliates my city, and I care about my city, and I'm a patriotic Clevelander. It's important to me, you know.
Uh-huh.
That's what I care about. This isn't me like in my own anxiety.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm completely willing to believe that. Has someone who has won championships now, he has a better understanding of the kind of effort and focus and, you know, how demanding it is to win. And he's probably, if he really wants to win more titles, which I think he does, who wouldn't, right? And he invested himself of a mission that he wants to win a title for Cleveland, among other things that he said he wanted to do. He has to put the kind of effort and focus and work that he did in Miami, and he has to enforce this on the rest of the team as well.
You use the word commitment, and that's pretty much everything. Like, guys come into the league and they think, well, take Anthony Bennett, for example. Guys come into the league and they think, like, oh, I'm gonna be a good basketball player. So I've always been a good basketball player.
No, they made it already. For a 19-year-old, be drafted, yeah. You're a millionaire. You made it.
Yeah, I made it on my talent. I can survive on my talent. I can be good in any basketball game because I'm a talented basketball player.
And I'm making $20 million regardless, given my contract.
Now, LeBron, for that, was so talented, so physically, athletically talented that he could just come in 2003 and immediately, after a couple of years, make an impact, take a team to playoff levels and then win MVPs without really making the kind of commitment that is required for championships. You know, so, and you know, 2010 was so close. I mean, they could have won that, but they didn't.
Yeah. I mean, I think they were closer in 2009. My opinion is that the 2009 team was.
Oh, I'm sorry, 2011 for the Heat is what I was talking about.
Oh yeah, they could have beat. They went to the finals this last season, you know, and they were crushed by the Spurs, but I think they kind of lost hope and whatever, you know, and like kind of broke down a little bit.
Half, most of the game with cramps.
Yeah, you need
that. There's a whole other, like, because at the time I was like, oh, here's cramps. It reminds me of the elbow situation in 2010. Yeah.
Do you think they're comfortable?
Yes. At the time, it was a funny joke, and I think like a warranted joke based on 2010. But now, in retrospect, and especially after this letter, it seems like he wasn't messing around. Like, he was trying to win, and he gave his all, and, like, he just couldn't do it. There was a lot of pressure on him. Like, the players around him, like his teammates, underperformed in the finals, which is something that happens against a team like the Spurs. But
yeah, that's what they do. They play better basketball than you, and you need to answer by playing better basketball than them, which is very difficult. And they were in a special situation. The Spurs lost to the finals in a dramatic way the season before that. And all season long, they had a factor of, we want to beat the Heat so bad. And they had a tremendous season. And it was some of the best basketball I've ever seen. So you can't blame someone for losing against this Spurs team, you know.
No, I mean, but you have to, as a Cavs fan now, if you're going to be like, oh, he's a different person, you have to be able to differentiate the cramps from the elbow. You have to say, I mean, there's no way that those two thoughts can, you can have those two thoughts at the same time.
Okay.
A different guy, but he just quit on seeing him again, you know? So, like, like I said, I mean, what this comes down to is, like, you absolutely have to be happy for the city of Cleveland right now and for the Cavs and for all Cleveland fans and Cavs fans everywhere. Because the team is closer to a championship than they were 2 days ago.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
No matter what. Now, I'm not, like, you can't compare what happened with LeBron signing with the Cavs to a championship at all. Like, we're miles from a championship still, and I don't think they'll win it next year, even though in Vegas they're 3-1 right now. I don't think they'll win it next year. They just have a young, inexperienced roster. They're going to have to make some moves. Some of these guys have never played defense in a basketball game. The best player is still Kyrie Irving, who played, what did he play, like 70-something games last year?
No, the best player is LeBron James.
Well, the best player outside of James.
Yeah. But,
you know what I'm saying, man. Like, they're a long way from a championship, I think. But they're closer than they were 2 days ago. And, like, as a Clevelander, that has got to make you ecstatic.
Yo, I am.
This is the number one. This is the greatest free agent signing in the history of Cleveland sports.
And I think he will never be topped.
I don't know, because he hasn't won a championship yet.
What I mean is, I don't know that a talent of the level of LeBron James, which we're talking here, you know, all-time great basketball players.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, the percentage chance that he just happened to be from Cleveland and then be drafted by the team, you know, and now coming back to it because he has a relationship. The main reason why he comes back here is because that's what he says, right? He has a relationship with the area, and that it meant something more than just play basketball. And he understands.
I'm inclined to believe that. I mean, I'm inclined because I love Cleveland so much. I'm inclined to believe that
other people from the
area feel
like that.
I don't like to say what's inside LeBron's brain, but I would like to say that anyone that's lived there understands the appeal, and that appeal can be more of a priority to you after you understand it than things like, you know, having career success somewhere else or having some kind of other attractive option. And people say, I mean, I haven't been a parent very long, but people say, like, you know, you want your kid to go, it's a good place to grow up if you're a kid. And he's got two of them now.
Almost three now.
Three. Yeah, I'll have three by the time he's a Cavalier in the season.
I think I don't know if it's overlooked, but it was probably one of the main reasons, you know. And I've read that he wants his kids to go to St. Vincent's and Mary's, that it means something
that it's very important to him. That and I read someone's take on it. I can't remember who it was, but it was something of the sort of, you know, we can't ask athletes to be role models, but when they decide to be, and at least if it's only for their own family, their children and whatever, and you have to recognize that it's a very big thing for, you know, because they don't, they're not, you can't ask that of them.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is a basketball podcast. This is a basketball podcast, but like,
we haven't talked about basketball, right?
Well, basketball isn't the most important thing in this situation.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
Like, it's Cleveland is the most important thing in this situation. And we call it Cleveland, Akron, whatever. Like, Cleveland is the most important thing in this situation. Northeast Ohio is the most important thing in this situation. And that is something Clevelanders should be proud of.
I want to also wanted to bring up something. What did you think of Gilbert's story, how he went to Miami and talked it out with James and stuff?
Yeah, I think it's funny. Like, so many things over the last season have been just completely screwed by the Cleveland media, and I guess I should say Cleveland Akron media, that cover the team. But this one, like, you know, he flew down there in a plane. People tracked the plane, which is crazy. Even though it's something that's done, you know, tracking planes and knowing who's on it is like a college football recruiting thing. But those people were probably instructive in this situation where we're figuring out that Dan Gilbert's private plane flew down to Florida for a secret meeting with LeBron James to hash these issues out, which is cool to me. What were you saying about the meeting?
I was saying, what did you think, you know, did you read the Woj piece about how the whole meeting went down and stuff?
Yeah, of course. And, like, I think that's what Gilbert felt like he had to do. And in a sense, whether LeBron James came back to the Cavs or not, it was probably the right thing for him to go down there and say that. And I respect the fact that, like, Gilbert consistently said, I would have reworded it, but something had to be said.
Like, yeah, a message had to be sent for the fans who were completely lost in this, the post decision. You know, it was such a weird feeling. You know, he left the team, he left the area, he left.
Yeah,
I think he left all the things he's coming back for. You know, somehow, and people were in a situation in limbo. You know, what are we gonna do now? You know, and it answered a lot of the concerns.
Some of the stuff in there was a little weird. I mean, I'm not going to say it wasn't, but ultimately, like, the things that he said were the things that LeBron James is now saying are important also.
Yeah, that's what you brought up earlier. I agree with you.
Yeah, being, you know, talking about the hometown being more important than basketball, talking about setting an example and being a role model, like, the letters reflected by LeBron James' piece in the Sports Illustrated, which is really interesting.
I agree with you. Casey, have you completely forgiven LeBron?
I think I have. You know, I guess time will tell if he's
will make good on his promises. How upset were you after he left?
I was really upset. I mean, I think I was just as upset as everybody else. I burned my jerseys, I was drinking a bunch of Four Locos, but... You know, I was really upset and disappointed. I was living in Pittsburgh at the time, and that was already a rough go for a Cleveland fan to live in that city. So it was a real low point, and it took a while to get over it. And I think that watching Dirk take him down in the finals kind of made it feel better, and I was able to get over it after that. And, I mean, after that, I just didn't like the guy, I guess. I didn't really hold a grudge against him. I just didn't want to have anything to do with him.
Are you willing to forgive him because he came back or because he wrote that letter?
I think in part, I mean, both. I think that he answered a lot of concerns that I had. And, you know, like I said before, I think I can relate to his reasoning to coming back. I mean, especially like, I mean, our situations are kind of similar. I mean, in mine, on a much less grand scale. I'm not a multi-millionaire basketball player, but I work in an industry that, you know, everyone wants you to go be in New York or LA, and I chose to come back to Cleveland, just because that's what's comfortable for me and that's where I want to be. You know,
makes sense. So you think if he just had announced, you know, if like Woj had broke the news that he was coming back or whatever, and you didn't have that letter to understand his process, you know, the mindset of him coming back, how would you have felt, do you think?
I don't know if my reaction would really be that much different, because I think just the act of coming back here, he is making
him coming back says more than him with the letter. Is
what you're saying. You know, I think his actions are actually, you know, speak louder than his words, but I think we needed that, because he's never been on that level with us before. He was always, I think Jack was talking earlier, that he's always kind of come off like he's above us. And I think now he's talking as a Clevelander, you know, or Northeast Ohio native. And I think we just needed that, you know. I think it was a good touch.
Jack, how would you have reacted if he didn't write that piece in Sports Illustrated? I just want to bring it up, but what an awesome job by Sports Illustrated, who broke the two biggest stories of the last year in the NBA, and Jason Collins is coming out and LeBron James is coming back without leaking anything and setting like an example for how you have to be a journalist. This is absolutely like incredible. I hope that people take, you know, a page of their book and be like, okay, this is how I have to work from now on, because I think this is awesome. Go ahead, Jack.
Well, ESPN being cut out of the process certainly is an interesting point. Just go make it. It was all about, you hear Sports Illustrated.
They had 15 people on set for SportsCenter, and not one of them had a clue.
It's just amazing. Yeah. So
the question was,
I'm not even sure. What are you asking me? If he hadn't written the letter,
if you hadn't written the letter, and if you had just learned that he was coming back, how different do you think your reaction would have been?
I think I would be critical. I would be easier for me to be critical of him and say, like, you know, that I would be easier for me to question his motives. I think I still kind of do. I'm not saying I don't question his motives at some point, because I don't. He said things in the past that he didn't live up to, or that he was just were blatant lies. And you know, that's 4 years ago or 5 years ago, whenever he said those things. But I'm not willing to give LeBron James the benefit of the doubt that just because he says something, he's being honest. I guess maybe that's cynicism he earned by being dishonest. So it's not like I'm the one that's a jerk in that situation, at least in that situation. But it helped me understand. And it pretty much, like I said, if you were the most hardcore LeBron James detractor, you just didn't like him because of the way he behaved when he was in Cleveland. And right after how he left, how he continued making comments about Cleveland and the players he played with, and et cetera. Like, these are the things that he would have wanted to say to start the dialogue about how he should be viewed as a member of the community. So,
is it missing any part, anything, in your opinion?
What's that?
Is it missing anything? Is there something you still want an answer to?
I don't know. I mean, to me, he kind of said like when the part where he said like going to Miami was like going to college for me. Like, I needed to get away and I needed to learn. That really felt like he was saying I was an immature high school kid that was just playing in my neighborhood, and then I couldn't learn there.
Mm-hmm.
So if he would have put we'll see whether that's true or not based on how he behaves when he comes back and how much control his guys have to have within the Cavaliers. But
so that, he just to your to
that's
you,
me he, reading into something that wasn't said.
Okay. To you, he just gained some time for now, and now he has to prove himself all over again.
Not all over. I mean, look, he's proven some things, that he's a great basketball player, but how about he's approved himself as a member of my community again. Yeah, I think so. I mean, coming back is a huge part of that, obviously. Obviously, he could have played his whole career somewhere else, then come back and said, like, I want to help out around here. You know, I'm not only give bikes to kids, but, like, I want to be a member of the Cavaliers organization and be involved in basketball in Northeast and Cleveland in Ohio. And that would have been something that we'd be discussing differently, maybe. So coming back and playing for the team and saying he wants to try to take them to a championship means a lot more than that. Okay. Credit, you have to give credit for that. I mean, he didn't have to come back to Cleveland. And it seems like he understands the importance of community and of family from what he's saying. And from basically what else would his only other motive, like I said, would be like, I want to dominate an organization the way I did before.
Yeah. Which, do you think Gilbert would allow that?
Probably. If it's profitable and helps the team win, mostly.
I read this Forbes report, or Business Insider, the valuation of the franchise got past $1 billion value because he came back.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole other issue we could talk about with the CBA and how poorly, here's something else that I have been thinking about for a while. So the decision that LeBron James made now in 2014 impacts what the arguments are that will be made in 2017, it's 2017 or 18 when the next 17. CBA.
17.
Yeah, in the 2017 CBA, like the players are going to opt out because they got totally hosed in 2011. They lost 7% of BRI, which is ridiculous. And then the league value exploded. And then there's going to be a renegotiation of the television rights for the NBA. And all of that is going to go way up. The sale of the Clippers just shows like the NBA franchises were either way undervalued or the value wasn't understood completely until very recently. And the salary cap is expected to go up. I'm not going to say astronomically because that would be double or triple or whatever, but at a much higher rate than we're used to seeing.
I have already read that something of the sort that it could be up to $90 million in three seasons.
Which is, to me, that's an astronomical increase.
That's a 50% increase on the value it is today. So in 3 years, it would be insane. It would be insane.
That's like having an ex-contract player on your team.
Which is why I think you make the wrong argument when you say it. This is once again another complete discussion that we will have later on, I guess. But if both parties are making more money, if the cap keeps going up, and if the NBA goes up and players make more money because the NBA's revenues go up, no one complains when everyone makes money. And This is why the Clinton years, for instance, people were so happy because everyone was getting richer, even though people were getting richer at very different rates. And no one complained because people were getting richer individually. So I don't we'll see that. But I don't want to get into this conversation.
Because they gave up 7% of PRI in 2011, and the reason they got it is because the owners were saying that they were losing revenue. When it turned out, like here we are. 3 years later, revenues comparatively, there's no way that argument could be made at this point. Revenue is way over where it was in 2011.
Which is why the 50% that the players make today are more than the 57 they made before.
Right, but the 57 that they would have right now if they had not given it up would be hundreds of millions of dollars more. And it will be again.
We'll see.
There will be another holdout, and the players will win the next one. And part of the reason will be because LeBron James returned to Cleveland. Guarantee it.
Okay, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying the
restrictions. Go ahead.
I'm pretty sure that, and once again, economically, history shows that, and it tends to be my expertise. So I quite feel confident saying that is that when everyone makes money. Even if people get richer at different rates, people don't complain about it. And
let me ask you this then: is there based on what you're saying, and kind of a little bit of what I'm saying, but based on what you're saying mostly, is LeBron James now the most powerful man in the NBA, hands down, no matter what? And did that happen because he decided to go back to Cleveland?
I think he
he showed over the last 10 days as the entire NBA spectrum and the league and the fans and the media and all was, everyone was waiting for his decision. I think he showed over the last 10 days that he was the most powerful person in the NBA. Yes.
But isn't he more powerful in Cleveland as the guy that has returned to his hometown than he would have been if he had colluded with three other players to decide which next city gets a championship, whether it be LA or, you know, Houston or wherever he and Carmelo were rumored to be getting together next? Doesn't this make him more powerful by just going out on his own and saying, this is where I'm going to be?
I don't know. I think you could have made the same point if you went back to Miami, because if you keep winning championships, you get more powerful, I think.
Yeah.
And so it all depends. If you keep winning, you are more powerful. That's basically the main point.
He's been in the NBA longer than any player on the Cavs, right? Longer than
Hayward now is on the team. I don't know when he was drafted.
Oh, Hayward is going into his 13th year. You're right.
So
other than Hayward. Hayward. He's been on the Cavs longer than anybody except for Hayward, and he's been to more All-Star games than Hayward, and more MVPs and championships, although Hayward has one.
He's by far the most powerful player and the most important figure in the NBA.
He's been in the NBA longer than Gilbert. He's been in the NBA longer than Blatt. He's been in the NBA, well, not as long as Griffin, I guess. Griffin's been in the NBA since 1992.
Yeah. But Griffin is a nobody, right? I guess the only other figure that has, not as big as him, but that could compete for that is Phil Jackson, maybe?
Yeah.
In terms of the influence he could have over the league?
It's a good question, man. I don't know, but that's where we are. That's interesting. You want to talk about basketball?
Just for 10 minutes then, because we're already up to 55 minutes, so. Let's just, bring it out to, I don't think I'm ready yet to make a call on what the Cavs are going to look like.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let's just assume it's the rest of the roster stays static and you have a lineup that consists of, Irving at the point guard, Waiters and Wiggins playing two, Wiggins playing 2-3 and LeBron playing 3-4. And then you have Haywood and Barajau at the center position with, I left out Tristan Thompson. Tristan Thompson and Bennett playing 4. Maybe some situations where Thompson has to play center also. Like, is that a team? Like, just setting aside, like, they lost CJ Miles and like they have some bench issues they're going to fill in. But, it looks like Ray Allen may be coming to the Cavs. And, right? And what's his name? The guy with the...
Miller?
That looks like... Yeah, Miller. I was going to say the guy looks like a meth head. I can't say that anymore. Now he's grabbing it. let's assume we know Miller comes, but Ray Allen, we're not sure of. But is that team good enough to win the East? That we saw last year.
Is it good enough to win the East?
Yeah.
It's in the conversation. I don't know. Might take a little while.
What's your opinion?
I'm not ready to say yet because there's a lot of factors at play, I think, including how Blatt's system, which I think is going to be tremendously entertaining for the fans, and how is it going to come to life with the roster? I think it's going to take a little while. It always takes a little while, you know, and we have a lot of young players who need to understand what it takes to win games, and I think it's going to be a big revelation for them. You know, all of the roster basically is going to benefit so much by adding someone of the magnitude, what we said, the most powerful men in the NBA, right? And then maybe one of the 10 greatest players of all time. And if guys like Kyrie and Dion can get it together, and like, I hope when he comes back from Brazil, you know, on Tuesday, he calls everyone to come to Cleveland and work out, because that's what they need to do, you know? And if they do that, and if I don't know, if everything goes right, yeah, they can win the East. But they still have they need more shooting. They're trying to find more shooters. They need rim protection. I don't know. I don't know how much rim protection Varejao and Haywood will provide.
You know what? I love that we're talking about Haywood. Like, he's actually going to play.
Nah.
He didn't play last year, right?
I don't know. I can check.
He had a broken foot. He played the year before that, and I think his minutes were like around 1,000 or 700 or something.
Yeah, he played 1,100 minutes in 2012-13. 19 minutes a game he played. 61
that's
games.
Pretty
that was,
good.
That's all right. He three,
but that's like
3.5 rebounds.
I like old guys. You can tell the young guys, like, you know, this is how you deal with avoiding alimony payments. Like, don't get anybody pregnant. Like, don't lend your car to an idiot friend.
That's, you know, what Ray Allen would do. Ray Allen is the guy who is, like, before every game, he's at the arena 3 hours before. And he's going to turn 40, and he's still a good shooter. And he's
drank alcohol.
And he never drank a drop of alcohol. And he picks his food, you know, like, he picks his food very carefully. And he's also
He only eats food that helps him shoot three-pointers.
And he also has mental issues, and he has to shave his head before every game because otherwise he doesn't feel okay. And I don't know, you know, he's won two championships or three championships.
But get back to the two. Get or three. He won with the Celtics.
He won one with Miami and two with and one with the Celtics.
One with Boston, yeah.
So he
two. But so you think they're not the front runner to win the East at this point?
I need to know what happens. I need to know if Indiana gets Stevenson back, which is going to be difficult for them. I need to know.
They're not, right? That's why they got Rudez and they got.
No, they don't know yet. They made an offer, $44 million over 5 years. He's trying to find more money. He hasn't been able to find suitors. Now that teams are going to fall, and, like, you know, Dallas put a lot of money on Parsons. He's coming back to Houston. LA didn't get to get Melo or anyone for that matters. So they might have to throw some money at that. Charlotte made a huge offer for Gordon Hayward, who's going back to Utah. So now those guys are going to look at second options. And if they're willing to put $55, $60 million on Lance Stevenson, I'm not sure that Indiana would match, because they've said that it would be complicated for them to match up a big offer. So if Indiana lose Stevenson, like, I guess they would regress compared to last year, and they were number one in the East. So that's the team you're looking at. There's a lot of up and coming team. What will the Raptors look like? They're the same team, a year older. You know,
the Cavs are better than the Raptors, right?
Same with DC. You know, Washington. We have to see what Washington. You know, the roster. Do they get Ariza back? Do they get Ariza back or not? Do they sign Deng? Sure. They've been rumored to sign Deng. You know, Miami.
You're telling me the Wizards are rumored to get Deng?
They say if they can't get Ariza, they might go after Deng.
Whoa.
But, you know, now Miami re-signed Bosch. I think Bosch is a completely underrated player. And as the first option on the team, he's going to be incredible, I think.
How great would it be if it was just, however it pans out, a playoff series between the Heat and Cavs now.
And we've talked about it for, what, 3 or 4 years, that we all want that Heat-Cavs series, right? And it might
finally happen. Yeah, but that's because, you know, that's part of the problem. Is, you know, in concept, part of the problem that I had with LeBron coming back is that I wanted the Cavs to beat him. Like, I've been looking for this, opportunity. Like, I wanted a 1-8 situation last season, so it could be, you know, I just wanted to take a swing at the bully, you know, and now it's like... We're teaming up, and we're never going to see that ever. That will never happen.
Because we
got to get let go of it.
We all agree that he will never leave again, right?
Or if he does, it'll be inconsequential if he does. I guess what I'm saying.
He will be 37, and, like, whatever, we'll trade him because he's $25 million a year.
Yeah, and
an
we'll
expiring
have, you know,
contract.
Wiggins will be ready to step in and be the guy.
Okay, I get it. All right. I guess we'll be online more often now that LeBron's back. That's pretty safe to say, right?
We did a pretty good job, man. We held it together for 4 years.
I know.
Following
ups and
basketball.
Downs. Ups and downs, but it was... It was, I don't know. I'm very happy that the Cavs basketball team is going to win an insane amount more games that they won over the last, you know, season and more. They saw that the record since LeBron left was 97 and 215 losses for 95 wins. So I'm really, really happy that this is not the future for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and that supersedes a lot of things, I think, even though we have, I think, made a good job at explaining that this was bigger than basketball. Yeah, I had a tremendous time. Thank you, Jack and Casey.
Let me just, one more thing I wanted to say to you. What's up? You got to hand it to Cleveland fans, man. Like, they supported horrible, horrible, horrible basketball teams for the last 3 years. That first year in particular, I mean, there were games where the best player on the team was Tomardo Samuels, man. Like, we went crazy about what Lester Hudson did for us for like a week and a half. We went crazy about like how high Christian Iyanka could jump at that one time he dunked on Pau Gasol.
Yeah.
Like, we went crazy for like Skyanga. Like, we were all about Skyanga, and like there were Skyanga t-shirts. Like, we were all crazy about the Cavaliers without LeBron James. And that's the city of Cleveland and their fans. And like, you can't give enough credit to those people that like packed queue on nights when it was like, you know, 15 degrees outside, it's snowing, and we're going in to see the Cavs play the horrible Orlando Magic on like a Tuesday night or whatever this season. Like, that was the, yeah, that was an overtime game with a very shot at the rebound record. But what I'm saying is, like, you can't, like, this city and these fans deserve this and better. And that's my hope for them. And like, whatever reservations you had about LeBron James and his character, setting aside even like whatever he could say through Sports Illustrated, you know, we deserve this, man. And I think I like to hope that he understands that as a former member of this community, and maybe somebody that should throw that fucking Yankee hat in the garbage and stop supporting the Dallas Cowboys.
Amen.
Amen. I think that we have to end it on this because it was awesome. Jack, you see, awesome. We'll talk very soon. Go Cavs, guys.